A warmer friendly hello! Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Soups with myself, Craig Oops Peterson, now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. We're going to be joined at segment number two by a good friend of ours, Ryan McIntyre, who does such great work over at the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. We're going to chat with him about the divide that we're seeing between the top teams and the rest of college basketball. We're also going to be diving in to take a look at a few games, and we only have a few that we've got for Thursday, the hierarchy of the Big Ten and the Big 12, which we believe are the top conferences in all of college basketball, and some of the top teams that he's been looking at in terms of the biggest surprises that he's seen thus far this season. In the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday as we hit some bank shots. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter /xtimeline at gunit_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. And while I did not get in any Twitter /X questions today, everything is powered by Better. That is BETR on Better. With Better, they make it easier to be able to get in on daily fantasy than ever before. You just take a look at a player's stat line, determine whether or not they're going to go over or under it, and boom, you're all ready to go. And you get $10 free by being a listener to this podcast. Just go to BETR.app, type in the promo code VEASANPOD. That gets you $10 to be able to get all good to go. And where jurisdictions allow, you're able to get in on money lines and spreads and all that good stuff as well. And there is a lot of good stuff going on in college basketball right now. Let's take a look back at everything that we saw in college basketball on Wednesday. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
Lots of big spreads were covered on Wednesday, with Houston being able to take down Jackson State, this by a count of 80-38 for Jackson State. It's been a rough season for them. They ended up in this game having 13 made field goals and 25 turnovers. That is not what you want to see, to say the least. There were players in this game that had more turnovers than points. And for Houston, they were able to do a nice job cleaning up the glass. They win the rebound battle 42-28. Emmanuel Sharp lived up to his name, 23 points. Milo Zuzan continuing to have a little bit of a rough season, only 6 points in this one. But Isaiah Harwell, he came off the bench. He was able to supply the team with 20 points, and that was a nice cruise over a win. How about Nebraska now being 10-0? And really, probably the marquee game of the night, 90-60. They completely dump truck Wisconsin. For Wisconsin, they go just 7 of 32 from 3. John Blackwell, 1 of 11 from the floor for 7 points, and a balanced attack for Nebraska. You had off the bench Brandon Frager be able to give you 15 points. Rink Mass, 17 points, 10 rebounds. Perky Boutisil was able to supply the team with 14 points up and down the boulevard. Nebraska rock solid in this one. They win the rebound battle. They also win the turnover battle by a count of 11-10 as well. So for Nebraska, a really nice showing out of them. Nice showing out of Baylor as well. They were able to take down Norfolk State by a count of 97-67. This was the first game of the day. So in that big spread, they were able to cover that. And for Baylor, 8 of 21 from 3 points. They shoot 53% from the floor. They sped this game up, winning the rebound battle 42-30. And for Baylor, you had 6 different guys score at least 11 points in this game. So they were able to go with a nice balanced attack of their own. And it was a nice attack for Purdue after they got completely lambasted by Iowa State over the weekend. They restore order 85-57 the final. They're only up 3 points at the half, but they outscore Minnesota in the second half 50-25 as for Minnesota, 6 of 25 from 3. Jaylor Crocker Johnson goes 4 of 9 from 3. So rest of the team outside of Crocker Johnson, they went a nice hearty 2 of 16 from 3-point. And for Purdue, Berrien Smith, he had himself a double-double, 15 points, 12 assists. Oscar Clough, a double-double, 14 points, 11 rebounds. Trey Kaufman Wren, a double-double, 14 points, 10 rebounds. As for Purdue, they won the rebound battle 46-23. That oftentimes is going to win you a game. And being able to win you a game, how about what we saw out of an unlikely source? As it was a nice double-figure win for Delaware. Going on the road, they take down George Washington 70-58. It's been a rough season for the Blue Hens, but for George Washington, they end up winning the turnover battle 18-12. But for Delaware, 9 of 20 from 3-point range. Delaware loses rebound battle 35-34. But on this day, Justin Fernandez, who dealt with injury to begin the season, 27 points. And for George Washington, Trey Autry had 17 points. Really, none of the other starters were able to give you more than 10 points. a nice upset winner there if you had Delaware. You had a nice winner if you were in on Boise State as well. 86-64, they take down Duquesne. Duquesne's really been speeding themselves up, but might be going a little bit too fast for their own good, as for Duquesne, they lose the turnover battle 11-8, and for Duquesne, just 5-25 for three-point range in this one. Meanwhile, for Boise State, how about Pearson Carmichael coming in off the bench for 26 points? Drew Fielder, he had 23 points, and Boise State scores 86 points despite RJ Keene and Dylan Andrews combining for 0 points in the backcourt, so that was relatively impressive out of them. This was relatively impressive as well. You got a nice performance out of Charleston, who has been having a rough season. They're able to cover what was like a 15-point spread when it's all said and done, 81-75 the final. Now, if you took that closing line over, just 67 points in the second half after you had 89 in the first half, but Charleston looks to be getting back to happy a little bit more. Connor Hickman had 15 points, and for South Florida, they continue to be rough with their three-point shooting, 9 of 32 from distance. They won the rebound battle. South Florida did 47-42, but for Charleston, looked quite a bit more respectable, as they've been one of the bigger disappointments here of the early college basketball season. NJIT has a money line underdog, 70-64 over New Haven. They found a way to be able to get the job done there, and then a nice upset winner from New Mexico. The Lobos all over VCU, 81-78 the final, as New Mexico was down 5 points at the half, but they go 8 of 18 from 3, while VCU just 7-26 from the outside. New Mexico actually loses a turnover battle 14-12, but they go 19 of 22 at the free throw line. Jake Hall, he has been really good coming up from the non-D1 ranks, supplies the team with 24 points, so they find a way to get it done. And Maine, they have been getting mained all season, 69-59. Their first game above 65 points all season long. They're a nice money line underdog winner over Boston U.S. for Maine, 7 of 12 from 3. They did have 14 turnovers in this game, but Boston U had 15, and Boston U 9 of 35 from the outside, so not a great effort there from the Terriers of Boston U, and that Patriot League is going to be interesting to say the least. A little bit of an unexpected slog from Western Kentucky. They fall to Marshall by a count of 77-61. For Western Kentucky, they go just 6-24 from 3. And for Western Kentucky, they lose the rebound battle by a count of 47-44. For Marshall, they go 9 of 23 from 3. As Jalen Spear, he spearheaded things. He was able to supply the team with 24 points. And for Matthew Van Komen, 5 blocks, 13 rebounds, 12 points from the 7'4" load of a man. So he was able to power the team to victory in that one. Also being able to power you to victory, how about a really nice effort for game number one for Notre Dame without Marcus Burton? 80-65, they do take down Idaho. Idaho goes 10-24 from three, but for Notre Dame, 9-14 from 3-point range. Appears as though we're going to be seeing a lot of Jalen Harrelson, with Mr. Burton being out of the fold. He was able to slide the team with 20 points, and then 19 points, 15 rebounds out of Carson Tout. Love what I saw there, and you have to love what you saw from this team. As for St. Bonaventure, they got down 13 points at the half against Colgate. They do find a way to get the job done, 85-77. Now, unable to cover the double-figure spread, but that said, for St. Bonaventure, they go just 4 of 19 from 3. Colgate was 5 of 21 from the outside, and for the Bonnies, they win the rebound battle 42-36, as Frank Mitchell, 19 points, 18 rebounds, and Caden Charles, he comes up big. He was able to supply the team with 10 rebounds. He had himself a double-double as well. And then one other team of note here from this college basketball Wednesday, Idaho State does a nice job holding in there against Utah Valley, 73-69. Final in this one for Idaho State. They've been a very rock solid team on the glass, and they do lose a rebound battle in this game, 38-25, but they find a way to go 9-23 from 3-point range. You had off the bench Caleb Vandergriend be able to supply 16 points, and for Utah Valley, rock solid defense, a team that's leaving a little bit something to be desired on offense. So 5-21 from 3-point range, and they lost a turnover battle 17-13. And as I'm doing this, Hawaii is taking on a non-Division I team. So we did get a game in Hawaii, but unfortunately, it was an unbettable game, so that was a little bit sad to say the least, but you have to feel happy if you had Cal State Northridge, aka CSUN, on the money line. They just barely take down Fresno State by a count of 89-87, and this was a tight spread, by the way, but for CSUN, they go 10 of 25 from 3. Fresno State, to their credit, 13 of 29 from the outside. Zion Collins was able to spy 24 points, but Larry Hughes II and Josh O'Garo, a combined 48 points for the Matadors, a team that has been a little bit up down all around, and for San Diego State, just not quite able to cover that game against Lamar. 89-71, that was a late game. And then in your harebrained game of the night, how about Tulsa all all over Arkansas Pine Bluff, 117-84, as for Tulsa, they put up 66 points in the second half, and this has not been an up-tempo team, but for Tulsa, they just go 14 out of 28 from three-point range. For the Golden Hurricane, they do a nice job in terms of keeping things clean. They win the turnover battle 15-10. They win the rebound battle 33-26. And off the bench, Jalen Lull was able to spy 20 points. And if you're looking trend-wise at what we're getting in college basketball right now, last 7 days have been very much dominated by the favorites, going 115, 102, and 5 against the spread for a 50% hit rate. It's been about as equal as it gets in terms of overs and unders. 110 overs, 110 unders, and two pushes along the way. And overall for the season, the under is still having itself a pretty nice season at about 51%, 805 unders to 775 overs, and favorites on the spread hitting at about 51%, 810, 762, and 26. So that's what we're seeing in college basketball right now, and that's what we're all seeing trend-wise. Coming next, let's chat with our good friend Ryan McIntyre. He does such great work over at the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, and he's going to be joining me to take a look at the hierarchy of college basketball. So games for Thursday right here on Tuscaloosa Sports with myself, Jamie Peterson, now a part of the Sports Gambling Podcast. Side edges college basketball season? Well, VSiN experts use CBB Analytics, the most comprehensive college basketball analytics platform in the world. See injury impact, on and off data, clutch time performance metrics, first versus second half splits, and so much more. Utilize the promo code of VSiN, that is V-S-I-N, to get $30 off and find your betting edge over at cbbanalytics.com. That is cbbanalytics, all one word, .com. For anyone that is new to VSiN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSiN because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSiN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter, and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. We're back here, lovely Las Vegas, with myself, Greg Eats Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man as we've got Ryan McIntyre aboard. He does such great work over at the Sports Gambling Podcast. So we're taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. He's dialed into a little bit of everything. I know that he does a tremendous job with the Ryan and Rush show that is all dedicated to West Virginia athletics. And I know that this man has a finger on the pulse of everything, both college basketball and college football as well, with bowl season upon us. And fortunately for us, when it comes to college basketball, Notre Dame will not be opting out of the rest of the season. And you're able to follow him on the old Twitter /X at @Moneyline_Maxfelt, M-A-C. And Ryan, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Always appreciate it, Greg. Yeah, we don't opt out over here on this show, right?
No, we never do. And Ryan, we've got ourselves a lot to take a look at in terms of college basketball, because I do feel like there's become a big separation between the have and have-nots in college basketball, with really, I would say, four teams separating themselves, and then a second tier of teams that has lost to those top four teams, as Arizona has obviously been rock solid to begin the season, Iowa State, Duke, and Michigan, and then you've got the likes of Gonzaga, Purdue, the teams that have lost to them, Houston I would throw in there as well, and I want to get your thoughts on that, because it does feel like this year we are clearly having a big hierarchy, and I would say a big divide between like the top 8 to 12 teams versus everyone else.
Yeah, those top four undefeated teams, to your point, have been really electric and all have had marquee wins, but also emphasizing the marquee with blowout wins. I mean, Iowa State going to Mackey and winning by 25 was incredible. Arizona going across the country, winning at Storrs, and then Michigan, it feels like wins by 50 every single night now and just completely annihilating everybody out there in Vegas and then Villanova. Yeah, Duke continues to win games as well. They're not blowing teams out to the degree that these other three teams are, but still win to win, and they're winning on the road too.
Yes, they certainly are, and I do think that it's going to be a lot of fun to take a look at these teams moving forward. And I do feel like with regards to hierarchy of college basketball, it has shifted a little bit, because as of right now, if you're looking at the polls themselves, there's no SEC teams in the top 10. As we know, polls, they don't necessarily mean a ton to us, but I do just take a look at the Big 12 and the Big 10, and it feels like these are the two conferences that are really jockeying for the top spot of best conference in college basketball right now. While the SEC, they just don't necessarily have those top teams, but I would argue with the SEC, they might have the most balance because the bottom teams have been rock solid, but the top teams have not been quite what they were a season ago.
My pecking order would be the Big 12 and then the Big 10 and then the SEC. I mean, the Big 12 is now, I think, 14-2 against the SEC straight up. They've really had their way. The Big 12, just from a top level aspect, we could see a dominant March, just like we saw with the SEC last year, where getting multiple teams into the Elite Eight and Final Four, they just have so many contenders at the top. I mean, we already talked about Arizona and Iowa State just leading the way. BYU only has one loss, and that was across the country at UConn. Houston, we know, is always going to be dynamite. They just have the one loss on the year, and I think Texas Tech and Kansas are kind of flying under the radar here. Kansas getting Peterson back, I think, is huge, and I think that this Big 12 is going to be so fun to watch.
Oh, I think so as well. I think that with the Big 12, we've got ourselves a lot of excitement here as Ryan McIntyre, who does such great work over at the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, he's joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And as we know, one of those notable teams from the Big 12, they are going to be in action on Thursday. It's not the most rambunctious card, but we do have ourselves a battle for the great state of Iowa, Iowa versus Iowa State. And I want to get your thoughts here because Iowa State, as we're recording this, are about a 12.5-point favorite that totals in the mid-140s. And what I think is really interesting about Iowa State is that they actually, if you look at raw points per possession, lead the country in terms of offense, and that's a little bit different from what we've seen out of this team in past years. And the defense is still there, but I feel like this Iowa State team has just taken it to another level on offense, and that will certainly be tested against a Hawkeyes team that loves to slow it down.
I was thinking the same thing. I think I'm going to be on Iowa in the points. I think Iowa State will win. It does make me a little bit nervous going against that building. We just see games get away from teams at Hilton, but I think they have enough, Iowa, the Hawkeyes, to keep this thing close by limiting possessions. I think Lipsy, the matchup is going to be fascinating to watch. As Lipsy, can he really speed up Bennett Sturts here, kind of like Sparty was able to wear him down? But I think Iowa's probably a better team for already playing in East Lansing here. So interested to see how they match up here in the annual Cy-Hawk Bowl. I see 12.5 out there, to your point. I'll take the points with the Hawkeyes.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I do think that with Iowa, this number has just gone a little bit too far, and I'm not sure what your opinions have been of Iowa, but I've been thoroughly impressed. They obviously got a little bit of a curb stomping when they went up against Michigan State, but all in all, I do take a look at this squad, and I do think that everything that Ben McCollum and company were able to do over at Drake is very much translating to Iowa, and I think that it's going to be a little bit of a case study for teams in future years to maybe take a little bit more of a stab on these Division II guys, because we're even seeing it with smaller programs like Denver, that these teams that they go the Division II route, they're having immediate success.
They are, because there's continuity right away. So gone are the days of taking chances on the high major assistant coaches. I definitely am with you. I like getting a guy that's a proven winner at multiple levels, and I think we'll continue to see that trend.
Yep, absolutely. And I do think that that's going to be a fun one to take a look at moving forward. And just how do you take a look at the entirety of the Big Ten? Because what we thought to begin the season is very true with Michigan and Purdue being the top teams. A lot of people have Purdue over Michigan. I personally did as well, though I thought that that gap was a little bit smaller than a lot of people think. Now we've obviously seen a reverse with Michigan up top and then Purdue that number two team. But I just still take a look at this entire Big Ten with what Nebraska has been able to do. We are doing this ahead of that Wednesday game between they and Wisconsin, but Michigan State has certainly been impressing me. I do think that Iowa, who we're going to be seeing in action on Thursday, is going to be rock solid moving forward. Wisconsin, UCLA, you need a little bit more out of Oregon, but even USC has been solid. And I just take a look at this Big Ten once again, and even though you do have those, I'm going to call it top three teams, because I do think that we can't be unfair to Michigan State, but outside those top three teams, I think that there's a lot of solid after them.
There is, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I think you could maybe throw, did you have Illinois in your top three?
I have Illinois number four.
Number four, I think that's fair too. I've gone on the road now and other neutral sites, and then UCLA is also, I think, solid, as well as Wisconsin. But to your point, I think that we have seen a little bit of a tier. I'm with you. I still throw Sparty in there, just because Tom Izzo is coaching that group, and as long as he's there, they'll always have a shot. But I think Purdue and Michigan, just from their size, experience, I mean, Michigan's defense is as good a unit as I've seen in a long, long time. But you mentioned it, the floor is up in the Big Ten. Teams like Indiana, Iowa, USC, Washington, I think are all solid. Nebraska's undefeated still. And then I think you have good coaches at the bottom that maybe they're not as good this year. You're looking at Dana Altman. It seems like his teams always play best coming down the stretch, so they're going to have to turn it on here. They haven't covered a game yet this year, but I just think it's a well-coached league and well-balanced league, even though they have like 1,000 teams in it.
Yeah, they do have 1,000 teams. And to your point, one of the worst team in your conference right now is a team coached by Dana Altman. You know that you've got a whole bunch of depth there. And what have been a few surprises for you thus far this season? Because I think that just sticking out there in the Big Ten, Nebraska has certainly been one of them. Again, we'll see how they're able to fare against Wisconsin on Wednesday. We're doing this before we record this, but have there been a few other teams, whether that be in the Big Ten, the Big 12, the Big East, you're able to go down the list that have just really caught your eye and have been pleasant surprises for you thus far this season?
I think we got to go to the Big East, man. I know the Big East has had a disappointing run at it, but I think you got to look at Seton Hall. I think Shaheen Holloway, everybody, I think, unanimously picked them last in the Big East. And you look at it now, I know conference play hasn't started, but they're 9-1. They've picked up a couple high major wins. Shaheen seems to have more of his guys this year. They're physical, they play hard. Their only loss was the USC at semifinal game that came right down the wire, but they've beaten NC State, they've beaten Wazoo, and I just talked about it. They beat K-State on the road. So their team, I think, has been a nice, pleasant surprise. I think there's been a lot of like surprises on the other aspect in the Big East, like how bad Marquette is. They are a dumpster fire right now, and I think how bad Cincinnati is once again under Wes Miller. Those are two teams that disappointing. I mean, it's not a hot seat year for Shaka. He's safe, but Wes Miller, I don't see how that thing works.
And I need to ask you about this because you are a Big 12 guy. Has it made any sense whatsoever as to why Cincinnati has went up tempo? And do you think that we might see a team like a Cincinnati, for instance, where things are not working out, go back to their roots and find a little bit of value to the under? And heck, I'll throw out there San Diego State as well, another team that's going a little bit more up tempo, because I do find that there are some teams that they experiment in non-conference play with regards to a change in tempo, whether that be faster or slower. And when it doesn't work out, they go back to the roots. And I think Cincinnati very much needs to do that because I actually like the defense, but to your point, that offense is absolutely terrible.
It is. And I think they will because I think what we talked about early in the episode, you're not going to outrun and outgun teams like BYU, Arizona, throw Kansas in there.
Kansas
And
State, even.
Houston and Iowa State, you're going to have to win football matches is what I call football games because it's so physical in that league night after night. I'm with you. They're going to have to limit possessions and find a way to get on the right side of a bunch of close games to get back into this bubble conversation. But I think, unfortunately for Bearcat fans, I think the damage is kind of already done. I mean, you can't lose a game like Eastern Michigan and then not have a quality win the rest of your non-con. So they still have a chance against Georgia and Clemson here, but the opportunities and time are running out for sure.
Yep, they certainly are. And for Cincinnati, it certainly has been rough for them. And I do think that that is an interesting aspect of things as well, because when it comes to these teams that have had a little bit of a less successful run, how much do you want to bank on either regression or what we were just talking about with Cincinnati, them getting back to their roots a little bit more? Because I do take a look at some of these teams. Heck, a James Madison, I would think, is a good example out there in your neck of the woods where you try something different. If it doesn't work, you go back to happy. And oftentimes, I think that that yields great value on teams this time of year.
I think so, because sometimes you build your roster for your conference to be able to match up. I think at the high majors, we see this a lot, where you drop an early bye game and then you go play those high majors in a Maui or Bahamas, and then you have a nice little bounce back because it's just from a matchup standpoint more favorable. So, yeah, I definitely think we could see some teams revert back to the mean or revert back to their coaches' principles and playing style. Because, I mean, we're talking about writing off teams. I know one thing, coaches and players haven't written themselves off yet either, with it only being what, December the 10th.
Yes, absolutely. And in terms of the slate that we do have on Thursday, the most notable game is obviously Iowa versus Iowa State. It's a little bit of a small card, but is there anything else that might be standing out to you? Because we do have ourselves old Doug Gottlieb in action, so that's always fun. We've got West Virginia, a few games out there in the Carolinas towards your neck of the woods. Anything that's really standing out to you?
Yeah, we got some bigger spreads once again. The App State, East Carolina is going to be an intriguing game. Both teams kind of struggling this year. St. Joe's, Syracuse, I mean, Syracuse laying 12.5. I don't know if I want to lay that big a number with Syracuse. They're kind of a team that plays more of closer games. I mean, they're another team that really popped up in those high major games and out there in Vegas and were chippy, and they just came off that Tennessee win. So I think I'll be looking to take the points with the Hawks here with St. Joe's.
Yep, and we'll see if things are able to work out a little bit better for Steve Donahue, as that team's three-point shooting has been awful, and this is a time of year where typically you do see a little bit of positivity there, and we always have positivity when you're aboard, Ryan. You do such an excellent job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. So let the good people at home know what's on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Always appreciate it, Greg. We're getting closer to conference play, which is my favorite time of year. Non-con is great, but definitely when we get to January and February, it gears up. So yeah, go check me out on my Twitter at @Moneyline_Mac, and then go check us out every night at the College Experience. Football, basketball, we got it all over there.
Absolutely, and I know that Ryan is doing such a great job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insights, and he did so once again today. So a big thanks to Ryan for joining me on Coast to Coast. He's now part of the Beats and Family podcast. Up next, it's a small card but a fun card. I give you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday as we some bank shots. Lovey Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Ryan McIntyre, who does such great work over at the Sports Gambling Podcast. I work looking at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insights, and he did so once again today. So a big thanks to Ryan for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /X feed at GUnit_81. And we're going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is going to be all the games except for UT Arlington and UT Rio Grande Valley and Alabama State and Missouri. Up top with those games going in time order, then Arlington versus UT Rio Grande Valley tips first, and then Alabama State versus Missouri. So let's get things started. 671, 672 on the card. IU Indy plays versus UW Green Bay. Green Bay is a road favorite of 2 to 2.5 points. So on this game between 166.5 to 167.5. I did set IU Indy as a 1.5 point favorite. I do like them on the money line. Now, IU Indy has been getting slowed down in their most recent few games, but this team is still second in the country in terms of total possessions per game. They do run into a UW Green Bay team that has actually done a nice job in terms of slowing things down. They're outside the top 300 in terms of total possessions per game, but just because you play slow, it doesn't mean that you play great defense, as when you're a bottom 50 team in terms of total possessions per game and you're giving up 76 points per game, yeah, that is not great. This is a UW Green Bay team that is currently outside the top 275 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, and for IU Indy, their big weakness has really been down low. They've got a few weaknesses, but I mean, that said, they're outside the top 350 in terms of their rebound percentage, 356th, but UW Green Bay, they are grabbing only about 19.5% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound. That ranks 356th in all of college basketball. And for IU Indy, they don't have to worry about dead possessions, because for UW Green Bay, 363rd in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. Now, Marcus Hall, the top scorer for Green Bay, is back after he missed a few games. He's playing 14.5 points, 4.5 boards. It seemed like Green Bay actually played a little bit better without him, though, as you've got Pressing Rudinger, who's been able to shoot 41% from three. Mac Rucky has been able to shoot about 35.5% from three-point range, and for UW Green Bay, they don't have a single guy in the roster that gives you over 5 rebounds per game, so again, that is very good for an IU Indy bunch. That they're very much looking to generate turnovers, top one on our team in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, and they themselves have turned the ball over 14 times a game. That's just what's going to happen with regards to a harebrained pace. But for IU Indy, they have it a top 200 team with regards to their 2-point shooting percentage. They've only got one guy that gives you over 4.5 rebounds per game. That'd be Finley Woodward, who's been able to do a nice job, give you about 8 points, 5.5 boards. And he does give out over 5 assists per game. So he's been a little bit of a point forward. And that's this IU Indy team. They've got a lot of versatility. They really don't play anyone other than Woodward, who's above 6'6". He's 6'7". And getting Jackson Edwards back out there on the floor, I think it's going to be big, because he's one of the few guys on the roster that had Division I experience prior to this season, and he's been able to give the team a combined 20 points and 4 assists in the last 2 games, so he should be able to give this team a little bit of support for this IU Indy team as well. They got just completely slowed down against Youngstown State over the weekend. They scored 55 points in that game. That's really the lone game this season that they've been held below 70, though, so I do think that we're going to see them be able to restore a little bit of order on offense with Kyler DeAgostino being able to give you 16 points per game. It's an IU Indy team that only shoots about 32% from three-point range, and this team loses the free throw battle. They actually give out about 13 more free throws to their opponents than they shoot themselves, but this is a UW Green Bay team that has had a very difficult time in terms of getting to the free throw line as well. For UW Green Bay, they have been a squad that has been outside the top 250 in terms of allowing free throws. They themselves are attempting about 23 free throws per game, so we'll give them a little bit of credit there. But that said, the clean possessions that IU Indy is going to get, I do think that that pressing style is going to be something that is going to be a bit of a culture shock for UW Green Bay and allow IU Indy to get the job done. I set my line at 1.5. I like IU Indy on the money line, and I'm in on the over. So my total 171.5. 673, 674 on the card. East Carolina plays us at Appalachian State. Appalachian State is a underdog of 5.5 points. Tonight's game, it is between 134.5 to 135.5. And it's at a total of 137.5. I like the over. I recognize that Appalachian State, a very slow tempo team. They are 363rd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. And East Carolina, they're a mid-tempo team. They're about a 173rd in the country with this regard. But you've got an East Carolina team that's really given it up from three, and they're just getting dominated across the perimeter. As for East Carolina, they are 322nd in opponent's three-point shooting percentage after being 358th here last year, 321st in their own three-point shooting percentage at 28.4% after they were outside the top 300 here last year. It's just as if these guys have not learned. And for East Carolina, it's not even like they're doing an amazing job on the glass. Sure, they're grabbing some second and third chances. This team is hauling in there about 13 offensive rebounds per game, and they've been a top 150 team with regards to rebound percentage. You've got Jordan Riley, 19.5 points, 5 boards. He's shooting a respectable 37.5% from 3. He is the only player other than Vito Petrovic, and Petrovic has attempted, I believe, 12 threes this season. That's shooting above 30% from the outside. So, that's not great to say the least. Giovanni Amoruju has been pretty rock solid down low. 13.5 points, 9.5 rebounds per game, but he's also the lone two guys on the roster, giving over 3.5 rebounds per game. It's an East Carolina team that's really been sloppy with the ball as well, outside the top 300 in terms of ball security. And for Appalachian State, this team is not bad at generating turnovers. I'm not going to call them amazing by any stretch of the imagination, but that said, it's a team that they have done a top 75 job in terms of taking care of the ball. They're only turning the ball over about 9.5 times per game, 52nd as a matter of fact, in terms of turnovers per possession. East Carolina, they're 289th, so Appalachian State going to get more clean possessions in this one. And for Appalachian State, they're a top 100 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound. Luke Wilson, no, not from old school, but I mean, he's an old school guy. Give me a block and a half, 5.5 boards, 9 points per game. You've had Kasan Jennings come on over from South Florida. Kennesaw State give you 14.5 points. He's shooting in the high 30s from 3-point range. And then you've been able to get a little bit of versatility with about 7.6 boards out of Nadrian Enjok. He's able to pop it from 3. He's not necessarily doing a great job of being able to do so, but even though Appalachian State is at the top 225 in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, they do a nice job punching it down low. They're a top 75 team with regards to their own 2-point shooting percentage. And for East Carolina, they're also struggling down low. They're about 250th in the country in terms of opponent's 2-point shooting percentage. I do think that this game has a propensity to be close enough for late game falling. As East Carolina, to their credit, they're a top 75 team in terms of getting to the free throw line. This Appalachian State team certainly has been putting teams on the free throw line. They're outside the top 175 in terms of fouls committed on a per possession basis. So this is a total. I set it at a 137.5. I like the over, and Appalachian State only set it as a 1.5 point underdog, so I'm going to be one take those points. 675, 676 on the card. It's Virginia Tech, and they play host to Western Carolina. Western Carolina, 19.5 to 20.5 point underdogs. 115.5 to 151.5 is the total. And I set a total of year of a 156.5. I'm going to be in on this total over, as you've got a Western Carolina team that is playing up tempo. They're about 72nd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Virginia Tech more around about 106th to 108th with this regard. And when it comes to Virginia Tech, this team just does a great job of taking care of the ball. Second in the country in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis. Now, you do want to note that Toby Luol, he is right now dealing with a little bit of injury. He has missed the last four games, and he was averaging darn near a double-double prior to going out with an injury, so that hurts him, and I would think he's going to be out until further notice. But that said, even without him, you've got Nicolas Avadeus, who at 6'8", he's been able to do a nice job in terms of running this offense. 5 assists, 13 points per game. Amani Hansberry has still been a dominator down low. 16 points, 8 boards, 3 assists, a steal and a half per contest, so these guys have been able to step up. And Jaden Schuett, he's right now shooting in the high 30s from 3-point range. He's been able to supply the team with the double-figure amount of points per game as well. It feels like he's coming on strong, 45% as a matter of fact, for is 3-point shooting. Now for Virginia Tech, they're giving up quite a bit on the inside. They're outside the top 175 in terms of opponent's 2-point shooting percentage, and that's big because Western Carolina, not a team that's going to light you up from 3-point range. They're currently they are well outside the top 320 in terms of their three-point shooting percentage, hovering right around about 29%. You do have Julian Sawarmo, who began his career over at Gardner Webb, doing a nice job, giving you about 13.5 points, shooting 37.5% for three. And CJ Hyland, when he's been out there, has been able to shoot 46.5% from three-point range. And Hyland should be good to go here. He has scored in double figures in the last three games that he's played. He's played in the last two, so he should be back in full force in this game. 29 points in the two games since he has returned, and then you've been able to have Abdiel Fanta-Kaba down low, be able to give you about 8 or so rebounds per game. This Western Carolina team actually does a nice job in terms of winning the rebound battle. Top 175 team in terms of rebound percentage. Top 100 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound. Problem has been turnovers. They're outside the top 280 in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis, and they are allowing teams to shoot darn near 36% from three-point range. They've been outside the top 280 with that regard. So a Virginia Tech team that they're very content to be able to bomb from three. They can play really anyway. I do think that they're going to have a lot of success here. I do think that Virginia Tech, even with Luol dealing with injury, they do find a way to be able to persevere, get the job done in a higher scoring game. Subway total 156.5, like the over, and a ball and a layup to 24 with Virginia Tech. 677, 678 on the card. Iowa is on the road against Iowa State. Iowa State is a favorite of 11.5. I'm seeing as high as 13.5 points out there, and total on this game between 142.5 to 143.5. Set a total of a 142.5. So 143 plus, I'm in on the under. You got an Iowa team that does an impeccable job in terms of slowing things down. For Iowa, they've actually just been a really efficient offense. They're currently a top 40 team in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. They're just 358th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. And I mean, both of these teams are rock solid on defense. Iowa State, 9th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Iowa is 43rd. And this game should feature a lot of dead possessions. Iowa State leads the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, but Iowa's number four, and for Iowa, Bennett Sturts has been the do-it-all guy for them. 19 points, 5 assists, he's shooting 45% from three. Team as a whole is shooting 38.5% from the outside. I do think that they're going to see a little bit of regression against a really good Iowa State defense, and it's just been really rebounding by committee for Iowa. You don't have a single guy that gives you over 4.3 rebounds per game, but out of your top five scorers, everyone except for Sturts gives you at least 4 rebounds per game. Alvaro Fulgurius comes over from Robert Morris. He's in a nice job being a Swiss Army knife. He had 6'9", 8 points, 4 boards, 2.5 assists, a steal. Shoots over 46% from 3-point range, but on the other side for Iowa State, for one, you've got Tamon Lipsby back, who he has really upped his scoring from past years, as he always used to be a really good defensive player, but wouldn't give you a ton on offense. Now he's been able to supply 17 points per game, shoots in the mid-30s from three, but continues to generate those 2.7 steals per game. But then you've got like 6'7", Milan Mimosilovic, who's led the team in scoring, shooting 53% from three, 18.5 points per game. And then 6'8", Joshua Jefferson. You want to talk about a do-it-all player, 17.5 points, 6.5 boards, 5.5 assists, steal and apricot contest, while shooting 45% from three. And Nate Heisey, when you were having a little bit of injury with Lipsby, he did a nice job, give you about 6 points, 4 boards. He's able to give you a bit of facilitation as well. Iowa State, they do a nice job in terms of keeping things clean as well. They're actually a top 75 team in terms of their own ball security. They are currently shooting 43.8% from 3. That'll be going downward a little bit. Iowa State has played some good competition. They've also played some outgun competition. They really have not been between A and B. And this is probably their most, shall we say, mid-tier game that they have played this far this season. Iowa State also very good at not putting you on the free throw line, which is very rare for a team that generates turnovers. They're a top 75 team in terms of fewest free throw attempts allowed on a per possession basis. So I think that you get a little bit more of a slow and controlled game. I do think that in this battle for the great state of Iowa, that the Hawkeyes do just enough to be able to hold in there. I did set my line here at a 10.5, so I'm going to be willing to take the 12 plus here with Iowa, and I'm in on the under sub. I told 142.5, 679, 680 on the card. It is Syracuse, and they are going to be playing against St. Joe's. St. Joe's hopes to not be average Joe's at 12.5 point underdogs. 144.5 to 145.5 is the total, and I do like the under. I set a total here of a 142.5. As for Syracuse, they're right now 19th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. I have been thoroughly impressed by the defense, and yeah, a pair of teams are just not shooting well from three. Syracuse is about 307th in the country in terms of their three-point shooting percentage at 29%. St. Joe's hovering right around 325th, 326th, depending upon the results from Wednesday, as they're shooting only about 28.5% from three-point range. And it should be noted, this is actually a game from lovely Las Vegas. This is all because St. Joe's was not allowed to be able to play in the Players Era tournament, so Syracuse did them a solid here, and they are playing this neutral court game, so I do think that that actually helps out the defense a little bit more here, and that's a big reason why I am going to be in on Syracuse. I set them as a 13.5 point favorite, and I actually feel like Syracuse has been a little bit worse ever since J.J. Starlin is back in the fold, because he's a guy that can very much shoot you out of a game. For Starlin, I mean, he's right now giving you good scoring with about 9 points, 3 boards per contest, but he hasn't been himself thus far this season, and him in a little bit of a reduced role, I think, is a very big thing. For Syracuse, they've been dealing with the injury to Donnie Freeman. He's already missed 4 games, but even in his absence, you've got William Kyle down low, has been able to supply nearly 3 blocks, 8 boards per game, and then Kion Anthony, he's been able to step up in a nice way, about 11.5 points per game. Again, you don't have a lot of 3-point shooting with this team. Freeman, by the way, should be out for this game once again. And then for St. Joseph's, they have been a relatively solid team in terms of shot blocking, as Justice Ajabor, he is giving you absolutely nothing other than block shots right now. For Ajabor, he's been a starter that has been supplying 4 points, 3.7 rebounds, and 2.1 blocks per game. You've had Deuce Jones be able to supply 15.5 points per game, and Derek Simpson, Jaden Glover in the backcourt, they combine for about 25 points, 9.5 boards, and Simpson has been able to give you 4 assists per game. For a St. Joe's team that has just had a tough time in terms of winning the turnover battle, they're outside the top 225 in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis on offense. They're outside the top 280 in terms of generating turnovers. St. Joe's about 95th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and they are a top 125 team in terms of opponents' 2-point shooting percentage, so they're not doing the world's worst job down low, but this is a Syracuse team that has been a top 75 unit in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. Syracuse getting a little bit lambasted on the glass, but they're still a top 15 team in terms of opponent's 2-point shooting percentage. With St. Joe's having a tough time from distance, I think that Syracuse finds a way to persevere, get the job done. 111-13 with Syracuse, set a total of 142.5, so I'm also in on the under. 681-682 is the last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board before we hit the two extra games. North Dakota State on the road against Cal State Bakersfield. Meet the Roadrunners are 5.5-6.5 point home underdogs. 147.5-148.5 is the total, and set a line of 5.5. So 6+, I'm going to be one to take the points with the Meet Roadrunners. As for North Dakota State, last year this team led all of college basketball in terms of 3-point shooting percentage. They are down to 315th in all of college basketball this season. And for North Dakota State, they've actually sped themselves up greatly. Last year, they were outside the top 225 in terms of total possessions per game. Now they're about 111th. Meanwhile, for Bakersfield, they've actually sped themselves up quite a bit. They're now in the top 100 in terms of total possessions per game. Has not yielded a lot on offense. As for Bakersfield, they take 71.1% of their shots from two-point range. That is 13th in all of college basketball in terms of percentage of their shots that come from two-point range, but the problem is they're about 290th with regards to two-point shooting percentage, and with this team 331st in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis. Bakersfield 286th right now in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, but for North Dakota State, they are currently 210th in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis after they were so rock-solid with this regard last season. Now, I will say this for North Dakota State, they're up to 52nd in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis after a season ago. They were quite literally in the bottom 5 in all of college basketball. And for Bakersfield, this team has been struggling with regards to their defense overall, 286th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. They're allowing about 30.5 points fewer per 100 possessions when they're at home rather than away from home. And it's a North Dakota State team that has been legitimately 62nd in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. And for North Dakota State, one thing that has really rang true for this team is not allowing a lot of second and third chances. For North Dakota State, right now top 100 team in terms of their defensive rebound percentage. Meanwhile, for Bakersfield, this has always been a team that has been pretty solid on glass. This year, they have fallen back to 320th in the country with regards to our rebound percentage, but I do think that Bakersfield is going to be able to hold in there as they're starting to be able to get some improved guard play. You've been able to get good production out of Dalen Smith along CJ Hardy. These two guys have been able to combine for just under 32 points per game. Hardy is shooting 44% from the outside, and then with Ron Jessamy, who comes out over from Tennessee State, 2.5 blocks, 6.5 rebounds per game. It is going to be a team that has a little bit of a tough time taking care of the ball, but this has been a team that's been pretty solid with their 3-point shooting defense. For Bakersfield, they're only shooting 28.5% from 3, but they're allowing teams to shoot less than 32% from the outside, and this is just not the same North Dakota State team that they've been in the past as well with that 3-point shooting, because they lose so many of those good scores from a season ago. They do get back to Mari Wheeler-Thomas, who missed all of last year due to injury. He's shooting 41.5% from 3, 14.5 points per game, but your top scorer, Markai Strickland, he has yet to attempt a three, and he's in the backcourt, giving you 14 points, 4 rebounds per game. You've had Anthony Stefanowicz do a nice job stepping up with about 2 steals, 5 assists, 8 points per contest, but he's only shooting about 25% from 3-point range, and then Ben Noah Federson at 6'9", see a big giant setback with his three-point shooting, but it's giving you about a block and a half per contest. He's been able to haul in their 9 rebounds per game as well. This is a North Dakota State team that's about 150th in the country in terms of opponent's two-point shooting percentage, but I do think that Bakersfield does just enough to hold in there against a North Dakota State team that is looking to turn over a new leaf, but it's been much different on offense, and even though these teams are playing a bit more up-tempo, do think that you get an under. Semi-total 143.5. I do like the under and 6-plus here with Bakersfield, and now we hit the extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
306-597, 306-598, UT Arlington is on the road against UT Rio Grande Valley, and the Vaqueros of UT Rio Grande Valley are right now 2.5-point favorites. Currently, we're not seeing a total up on this game, which is a bit strange, but I've got my handicap set at a total of 147.5, so 147 or less, I'm in on the over, 148 or higher, the under, and at 2+, I'm willing to take the points with UT Arlington. With UT Arlington, this team has been absolutely terrible at taking care of the ball. 56th in the country in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis. Well, you've got a Grand Valley team that, if you look specifically at their home games, they are turning the ball over more than anyone else in all of college basketball. 28.7% of their possessions at home are yielding a turnover. That is not great, to say the least. And for Grand Valley, you've got a team that in the past has really looked to push a lot of tempo. They're dialing it back a little bit more this year, about 139th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. And UT Arlington has as well. They're about 225th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. I do think that both of these teams are going to clean up a little bit, as neither of these teams are super rambunctious at generating turnovers. But the big edge that you've got for this UT Arlington team is hitting the glass. They're currently 39th in the country in terms of percentage of their missed shots. They result in an offensive rebound as they're hauling one in on about 35.8% of their misses. Grand Valley is 303rd with this regard. This despite the fact that you've had some improved backcourt play, as Corey Kahn, Marvin McGee, these two guys are combining for about 26.5 points per contest. McGee has been able to shoot 41% from three. Both of these guys give you between 5 and 5.5 rebounds per game. Lone two guys on the roster give you above 3.7 rebounds per game. This despite the fact that you've got Phil Brankovic, who's been able to come in from Serbia. He's been able to give you 9 points. He's actually shooting 47% from 3-point range. And this is a Grand Valley team that has a whole. They're currently shooting 39% from the outside. I think that this is a case of what comes up must come down with regards to them, and it has been a Grand Valley team that has been outside the top 175 in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage, and I do think that that's really where this Arlington team is going to be able to eat, as they had a lot of guys leave in the offseason. Rayshon Semester is really the lone holdover, and he's done a nice job leading the way. 16 points, 7 boards, a little bit over 2 assists per game. Meanwhile, Cameron Jackson has come in as a 6'8", a little bit of a do-it-all player, 6 points, 6 boards per contest, so I like what I've seen out of him. But Marcel McCreary, who began his career over at Northern Colorado, he's been able to come in, give the team a nice scoring pop, shooting 43.5% from three, 12 points per game. And I think that there's a bit of positivity doing for this Arlington three-point shooting. They're right now shooting 28.1% from three-point. This is not going to be a team that's going to be amazing from three-point range or anything like that, but I do think that that improves a little bit. I really don't think the turnovers improve, but they're also a top 125 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. And for Arlington, they're also allowing teams to shoot less than 25% from three-point range. That includes their 91 games as a number that's going to be going northward as well. But I do think that Arlington, with the way that they hit the glass, they do a nice job in terms of finding second and third chances and hold in there. So 147 or less and on the over, 148 or higher the under. And here at 2+, won't take the points with Arlington. We wrap things up with 306-599, 306-600. You've got Missouri playing with Alabama State. Alabama State is a underdog here of 22 to 22.5 points. 157.5 is the total, and I'm going to be in on the over. So my total at a 158. So 157.5 is my absolute max by point, but I'm going to be in on that over, and I'm going to lay it with Missouri. I set them as a 24-point favorite. Have an Alabama State team that last year was a top 10 team in terms of field turnovers on a per possession basis. That has went way northward this year. They are now outside the top 225 in terms of ball security. Now, they've been able to do a little bit of a better job on the glass. They become a top 225 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound, and it's really been by committee. Your lone guy that gives you over 4.8 rebounds per game, and it's approximately 5 rebounds, is Cam Polisi, who comes over from Canisius, 6 points, 5 boards, pair of assists per game. So he's been a do-it-all player, shooting 40% from three. And this Alabama State team as a whole, they do shoot 36% from the outside with Micah Simpson along with Ashawn Anderson really leading the way. These two guys have done an exceptional job combining for 34.8 points per game. Simpson has been able to shoot 39% from three. Anderson only shoots about 30% from three, but he gives out 4.4 assists per game. Problem is, between the two of them, about 6.7 turnovers per game. And you do have a Missouri team that maybe they're not generating as many turnovers as they have in the past. pass, and they've dialed things back a little bit. Missouri just a hair outside the top 100 in terms of total possessions per game, but still a top 175 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. And Missouri 30th in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, because they're doing a great job hauling in their second and third chances. With Missouri, they're a top 25 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound. And while Alabama State does a good job giving themselves second and third chances, they've been bad on the defensive glass. They are 304th in defensive rebound percentage, as 33.7% of opponents' missed shots do result in an offensive rebound. And that should allow Mark Mitchell to dominate this game. 18.5 points, 6 boards, 3 assists per game. And then Jacob Cruz at like 6'8", 14 points per game. He's shooting 48% from 3. The guards in Sebastian Mack, Anthony Robinson, they're both giving between 9 and 9.5 points per game. And with Robinson, he's been able to shoot about 36.5% from 3-point. Good active hands with both of those guys. Now, it looks like Jaden Stone probably going to still be out of the fold for this team. He's been one of their main scorers, but even without him, I think that they are going to be just fine. As you've got Javon Porter at 6'11", is able to give you 7 points, a few boards, and he's able to pop it and lock it from 3-point range. And then Sean Phillips, he was dealing with a little bit of an injury. He's a nice post presence at his back, and in the last 4 games that he's actually played for this team, he's been able to give the team 7 blocks. So I do think that Missouri is going to be able to dominate on the inside, and I do think that they're going to be nice and efficient on offense. And Alabama State, they have been cranking up their tempo a little bit more. They're about 82nd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. So out of 157.5 or less, I'm going to be in on the over, and with Missouri willing to lay up to 23.5 with them, and that'll wrap things up for the Thursday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment, idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one or two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter /XIMLine at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, Larry CM, the aiming does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you are able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. And I'm with you guys every single day on this podcast with picks and analysis on every single game every single day. And big thanks once again to Ryan McIntyre of the Sports Gambling Podcast Network for joining me in the last segment. And I'll be back with you guys once again tomorrow. Thank you so much.